All right, so we are holding Yudzayin Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Okay, we've been talking all this time about Dam Nida, so now we have to define where exactly does Dam Nida come from. After all, I mean, a woman has blood coming out of her. Maybe it came from the uterus. Maybe not. It may have come from some other area. So the Mishnah says, Moshul Moshul Chachamim Be'isha. The Chachamim gave an analogy to explain how the layout of the relevant parts is in a woman. Hacheder v'hafroizder v'haliyah. The cheder, which literally means the inner chamber, the pashtus, that means the womb, the proizer, then you have the entryway, the hallway to that, which the pashtus means the vagina, the aliyah, and then you have the aliyah, which is like, so to speak, like a second story above those. So what is that? There you have, some of the Rishonim learn, Rashi doesn't say specifically what it is, some of the Rishonim learn that it is the bladder, the urinary bladder, which if a woman is laying down, then you can speak of it as being on top of the cheder and the aliyah, as being on top of the cheder and the shrizer. That obviously not when she's standing, but when she's laying down, let's say, then you would have it is above it. No, that's relevant to what we're going to talk about in the Gemara, because then blood could right. We're going to see though in the Gemara there's a bit of it becomes a little bit difficult to understand that based on certain things that we'll see in the Gemara, but wait a second. The other major explanation is the Rambam, which is that the aliyah means the ovaries. The ovaries are, there's two things, one on each side of the woman's body where she produces eggs every month, right? There are no normal, yeah, well, from them you have the tubes. The Rambam learns that the tubes are what we call in the Gemara lul. We'll get to that. The Mishnah doesn't mention the lul. The Mishnah doesn't mention any connection between the aliyah and anything else, but we'll see in the Gemara. Anyway, so those are the two major ways of explaining it. We'll see as we get to the Gemara, we'll see that it's a little bit difficult to understand both of those, you know, if you actually look at the layout of the relevant organs, but we'll see. Okay. Anyway, dam cheder tome, blood that comes from the cheder, namely from the womb, is tome. Dam ha'aliyah tahar. On the other hand, blood that comes from the aliyah is tahar. Whether you consider the aliyah to be the bladder or whether you consider it to be the ovaries, either way, blood that comes from there is no different than blood from anywhere else in the body. Dam ha'cheder would be the cheder, but pashtus would be the uterus, the womb. The blood that comes, so the vagina would be the proizder, we said. That would be the proizder. That would be the entryway. Nimsa b'proizer, so therefore, okay, so if you find blood that you know came from the cheder, then it's tummy. If you find blood that you know came from the aliyah, then you know it's tahar. What happens, nimsa b'proizer, what happens if you find blood in the proizer, in the vagina? Seikoi tummy. You have a suffix where it came from. It may have come from the cheder, from the womb. It may have come from the aliyah. Cheder is the uterus, pastor. Proizer should be the vagina. And aliyah, you have either the aliyah as the bladder or the ovary. It cannot be the bladder. No. Hold on. That's we're going to get to in the Gemara. We're going to talk about the lul. Then we'll talk about it in more detail. So wait. If you find blood,
the middle is short.
If it comes from the uterus, from the back womb, then for sure it's tummy. If it came from the aliyah, whichever the aliyah is, then it's tahar. But if you find it in the prozo, you find it in the vagina, seikei tome, then you have, hold on.
You find it in the vagina, and it still can come from the uterus.
That's the point. So therefore, you have a suffix. Did it come from the uterus, or did it come from the aliyah? Therefore, seikei tome, therefore you have a suffix. And because of the suffix, we have to say it's tome. And Rashi mentions, by the way, based on the Gemara, that seikei tome doesn't mean we only consider it tome in the suffix. Actually, we're going to see. The Gemara is going to bring us a number of different possible ways of explaining our Mishnah, but we'll see. But right now, Rashi explains that what it means is because of the suffix, we have to consider that it to be definitely Tommy. We have to consider that it definitely came from the cheder. Lafisha chazkase min ha-mokar, because the chazaka is that it came from the mokar. Sure, it may have come from the aliyah, but it's more likely, as we're going to see in the Gemara, to have come from the cheder. So wait. Well, I know you're wondering about the relevant anatomy. So hold on, let's first learn what the Gemara adds, a detail that the Mishnah didn't mention about the anatomy, and then we'll talk about how that fits with Rashi's explanation and how we can see whether we can make that fit with Rashi's explanation, with Rambam, and there's another explanation I've seen as well. So the Gemara starts off. Rami Vashmur Rav Yitzchok Brei Rav Yehuda, these two Amoraim, Tonu Nida Bei Rav Huna. They were learning Masech Nida in the yeshiva of Rav Huna. Ashkechinu Rabba Bar in Babel, of course. Rav Huna was the Rosh Hashiva of Sura. Ashkechinu Rabba Bar Rav Huna. So one time Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, so the son of the Rosh Hashiva, found these two Amoraim, Rami and Rav Yitzchok, the Yasri v'Ka'amri. They were sitting and saying as follows. a cheder mibifnim. The cheder is what's further into the body, namely, again, the uterus. The proizder mibachutz. The proizder is towards the outside. It's like an entryway to go into the cheder.
No.
What do you mean? It's the other way around. The uterus is further into the body. The aliyah b'nuyal shtehem. The aliyah is situated on top of both of them. So if we say it means the bladder, then again, it means if the woman is lying down, then the bladder is like partially on top of the uterus and partially on top of the vagina. If you say it means the ovaries, then also you have the whole area inside the body where the ovaries and the fallopian tubes are, whatever can be said to be.
The vagina is not above the uterus.
Nobody said it was. We're saying it's further outside of the uterus. How do you get to the uterus? Through the vagina. Right? How does a baby come out of the uterus? Through the vagina, through the birth.
The bladder.
When the woman is lying down, the bladder can be said to be above the uterus and above the vagina. She's lying down toward the front of her body. So when she's lying down, then it's in effect on top of both. Lying down on her back. No, we're talking about if she's lying on her
back.
The reason why this is relevant is, again, because we're trying to figure out if you find blood in the proizder, where did it come from? Now, one second. The lul, here's the key point, which the Mishnah didn't mention. The lul pasuach ben aliyah the proizder. There is a lul, which means like an entryway open between the aliyah and the proizder. And therefore, you have, the question is, what happens, where is the blood found relative to this lul? Now, what does the lul mean? So if you go, like the explanation, if you follow the explanation that the aliyah means the bladder, then it becomes very difficult to understand. There is actually no opening from the bladder into the vagina. So therefore, so what's this loop? So one possibility they mentioned in the notes, the Ars Scroll Gemara, that you do have, for example, if a woman has had an infection and it wasn't treated with antibiotics, or if a woman had a hard childbirth or whatever, it can create a hole there. So there's such a thing as, so yeah, sometimes if an unnatural hole can be created in the body where one doesn't belong, it's called a medical either fistula. So you can have, let's say, in other words, to the Gemara, so they might be talking about a lul as a normal feature. Even it's not necessarily a normal feature, but practically speaking, almost any woman in those days, they didn't have antibiotics and they had lots of children. So therefore, almost any woman in those days that you examine would have such a fistula, and therefore they're talking about it as a regular feature. That's one possibility. The other possibility, again, if you say that the aliyah is the ovaries, the Rambam learns then that the lul is the fallopian tube, which connects the ovaries to the... The only problem with that is that the Rambam describes that the lul opens up into the proizer, which is based on our Gemara over here. And the problem with that is the fallopian tubes don't open into the vagina, they open into the uterus. So therefore, it's a little hard to understand the Rambam's position also. The Chassam Sofer, actually, when he's discussing this Gemara, says just the opposite. He says, actually, it's easier to understand the Rambam in light of current medical knowledge. It's much harder to understand Rashi, and therefore he says, I'm not even going to bother with Rashi's explanation. I'm just going to explain our Gemara. The Rambam says that the aliyah is the ovaries, and the lul is the fallopian tubes. And the Rambam describes that they open into the proizer, but the problem is, that's neither here nor there, but more to the point is the fact that they open into the... So you could say a lul... No, but it's fine. It means one on each side, whatever, but the point is that... We can get out the art. We can get the Ars Scroll Gemara. They have a schematic. Actually, there is actually the Maharam in the back of the Gemara has a picture of a schematic kind of. Although again, the Tram Sofer says it's hard to make that work with what we know in modern medical terms. But basically, he has a sort of picture over here. You have the Aliyah on top, you have the Lul going in between them, and you have the Cheder inside and the Proser towards the outside. Okay, it's not really the best picture, but whatever. We could go over. So here's one way of illustrating it. You've got the cheder, which is the uterus, further back in the body. You've got the proizder, which goes out towards the front of the body. Then you have the aliyah, which, let's say, if we assume that the aliyah is the bladder, so it doesn't normally have a hole into the vagina, but it could, let's say, because of infection. This would be like you're distinguishing between the proizder behind the lul and in front of it. And it's not exactly an exact lul. The lul would be the hole from the aliyah down into the, yeah. Okay, so there is actually an explanation.
So
there are the tubes that are not shown in this picture. But Amman would understand that you have the ovaries, which are like here and here. They have tubes that open out. So that Amman writes that they open out into the cheder, but the problem is they don't. In an actual woman, they open into the cheder, into the uterus. So it's a little hard to understand that Amman.
Okay. So that's the uterus. That's the bladder.
Okay.
That's the urethra.
Okay. Anyway, so I'll tell you actually it would be better to have a bit better outside view actually. I'll tell you better. Okay, anyway. The bottom line is another explanation that I've seen. Somebody with a frum guy wrote frum professor of anatomy or whatever wrote in one of the medical journals, whatever, some years back. He brings that maybe the possibility is the cloister might be not the entire vagina, but just the area between the outer lips. You have the outer larger lips, they're called the labia majora in medicalese, and you have inside them are smaller ones, they're called the labia minora. So whatever, the cloister might be the area between the larger lips on the outside that you have opening out into there is you have the vagina, and you also have the urethra where the woman urinates. So then that hole, the urethra itself could be the lul. So there you have it. It is a normal thing to happen. Yeah, right. So then in other words, so we're not...
The person has a bad bladder, so blood can run into through the uterine.
According to the first explanation, no. I mean, there's no way that blood is going to get from the bladder into the uterus or into the vagina or whatever unless there's a hole there that doesn't belong there. Well, that's basically a fistula, yeah. But on the other hand, if you say that the prosder is strictly the area between the outer lips, and then opening into that, you have the cheder, then we would say means not just the uterus, but the entire vagina. And then you'd say, let's say according to that, that the lul is the urethra, then it works out nicely. Okay, that's
good.
If you say that the cheder means not just the uterus, but the entire vagina, until you get to the outer lips, cheder would be the uterus plus the vagina, all the way to the outer lips. The alia would be the bladder, and the lul would be the urethra, which goes out, which exits out between the lips. Okay, so it's another possible way of thinking. Okay, anyway, so therefore he said
that would be the best.
Okay, so that's there is an advantage to that, a bit of a disadvantage.
But that's if
she's standing up. If she's laying down, then you have if she's laying down, then the bladder is there on top of the uterus and on top. Okay. If she's laying down, then there's the bladder, and there's the uterus underneath it, and there's the vagina underneath it. So it works out. But okay. Anyway, the only problem I see with that last explanation, I mean, it sounds very attractive because it works well with the actual anatomy. The one problem with it is that then it requires us to say that any blood that comes from anywhere in the vagina would be metameter, and that's not so. It's really only if it comes from the uterus. So then the Gemara would be because the fact is, because if you're saying the cheder, if the Mishnah is saying that any blood that comes from the cheder is tameh, and we're going to say the cheder is anything from the inner lips, from the labia minora and back, then you're including the entire vaginal canal. Right. Okay. Anyway. All right. Let's continue the Gemara. So that particular detail would be a little hard to. Okay. Anyway. Fine. So they continue like this. Okay. So there's the basic layout. Now that we understand the basic layout, then now we can learn the relevant halacha. So Rami Bashmul and Rav Yitzchak Bar Yehuda are sitting and saying nimsim and alul v'lifnim. So now what happens if you find blood in the proizder, in the vagina? If you find it min halul v'lifnim, if you find it further back in the body than the lul, meaning between the uterus and the lul, then seikei tamei. Then it's a suffix, and then it's a suffix whether it's tummy, because and therefore it's a suffix whether it's tummy, because if it came from the aliyah, then you would expect to find it further outward in the prosder. You wouldn't expect it to find it going backward further back in the body. Again,
it could fall
and go back inside. Well, yeah, it could. Then bring up such a possibility later. But right now, we're assuming that what we're saying is that if it came from the aliyah, you would expect to find it further forward. Let's say the aliyah is the bladder. Yeah, you would expect to find it further forward than that. You wouldn't expect it to leak backward, right? Okay. Right. So therefore, fake it, Tommy, because more likely it came from the uterus, right? Yeah. Mina lul v'lachut, sfeika tahor. On the other hand, they say if you find it from the lul outward, anywhere from the lul until the outside of the body, then from the urethra, let's say, or from the fistula or whatever, yeah, however you explain it, until to the outside, sfeika tahor. Then it's a suffix, and we can say it's tahor. So that was what they said. Also for Omale Lavu. So now Rabba Barabhuna, having heard this, went and tells his father. He says, what are they saying? They're saying in your name. They're saying this in your name. Sveike Tome Amrit Monmar. Did you tell us that Sveike Tome, meaning that we're only toiler, that we don't say it's for sure Tome? The Mishnah uses the expression, the Chazaka is that it came from the womb, meaning that it's a Tumavade. Now, obviously, so according to Rashi, the question is, according to the way that they just said it, it sounds like there's no place where it's Vade Tome. Either if it's further back than Sofet Tome, if it's further forward than Sofet Tahor, where do you have any place where it's going to be Vade Tome, which is what the Mishnah is implying? Amalei, so Rav Huna explains to him, Ano Hochi Kamina, actually, this is what I meant to say, this is what I was saying, Mina Lul V'lefnim Vade Tome. If the blood is found from the lul and anywhere further inward, back towards the uterus, then in other words, we find it in the vagina, but we find it from the lul and going back, anywhere between the opening of the uterus, the cervix, and the lul. If we find it anywhere in that area, then vada tome. Then we have to say definitely tome, because how did it get there? It could have come from the lul and leaked backwards, but that's not very likely. The likelihood is that it came from the uterus. Meaning, in other words, because if it comes from here, then you would expect it to leak forward. This is higher up in the body, yeah. So therefore, it should go downward. It should go down in from here into the proizer, into the vagina, and then leak out if the blood came from the alveoli. So therefore, let's say if we take the alveoli to be the bladder, right? So then, yeah. So okay. Well, it's not a very accurate diagram. Fine, but that's much more schematic than anything else. Okay, fine. Fine. So let's say we assume that the lul is a fistula that develops over here between the...
No, this is the lul,
the urethra. No, that's one... Okay, that's the last way I was telling you. That's one way of explaining it. It doesn't seem to fit, though, with the way... I mean, it's a way of explaining it. Fine, but let's assume, like most of the Rishonim do, that the proizer is the entire vagina. In that case, the only way for there to be a connection between this and this would be a fistula. It would be if a hole develops on that.
It can go down the urethra and go...
No, but that's the point. No, because then the lul is all the way over here. Then you then
no,
any,
the lul is not.
The lul is all the way in the front. Because you could say it that way, but it's right. Okay, the point is anyway, so if you find it anywhere inward from the lul, vadai tome, because it's unlikely that it leaks backwards like that. It's far more likely that it came from the uterus and is going outward.
Why not say more simply that if it's a large amount of blood, it's probably uterine. If it's a very small amount of blood...
Not necessarily. First of all, we've learned before that even if it's a tiny amount of blood, and it does come from the rectum, that makes a tome. There's no minimum amount from the rechem, from the uterus, that makes the tome. So no, we can't go based on volume. Okay, anyway. So Rav Huna explains like this. If it's anywhere inward from the lul, then vada tome, then it's definitely tome, because the greater likelihood is that it came from the uterus. Mina lul v'lachut, seifa tome. On the other hand, what I'm saying is if you find the blood anywhere from the lul and further out, then it's only suffix tome, because it may have come from the uterus, sure, but it may have also come from the alveoli. Omer Abaye, let's say the bladder. Omer Abaye, but Abaye says, why, what's the difference? My shenomena lul v'lachut, why are you saying that if you find it anywhere further out from the lul, you're saying it's a suffix, and you're saying it's a suffix because you're saying it's a suffix whether it's tome, because the Dilma Shochta, because she may have bent downward ume cheder also, and therefore actually this blood came from the cheder and leaked downward. If you're going to say that, mina lul v'lefnim nami. So if you find it in the inner half of the proizer, in the inner half of the vagina, also nami. Ema is dakra. She may have straightened up, or actually it actually says laid on her back. She may have laid on her back with my aliyah. And then
if you say it comes from the vagina to the lul, by
no, what we're saying is it may have come from the aliyah through the lul and then wound up in the vagina. So Abaya is saying the same way as you could say that if you find it on the, further out than the lul, yes, maybe it came from the aliyah, but maybe it came from the rechem. Why? From the uterus. Why? Because she may have bent down and that caused the blood. That caused there to be a straight path down, and therefore the blood leaked out by the same logic. So you have a 50-50
way to
not necessarily. Well, hold on. Okay, actually, we're going to talk about that point soon, about the top versus the bottom of the prose. There's a way, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But right now, so if you find it in the inner half, between the uterus and the lul, nami, then you have the same thing. Amei zakra, she may have straightened up, or actually Rashi says she may have laid flat on her back. And then also the blood, and then also you could say the blood may have come from the aliyah and then traveled backward, because she's laying down, and therefore... No, but enough that if you find it, so why do you say? Because as he's saying, if you find it from the lul and inward, anywhere between the lul and the cheder, then automatically it's tummy. But how do you know? There's still the chance if she was laying down, it may have come from the aliyah. So why are you saying in one case it's vada, in the other case it's vada, tummy, in the other case? Why do you say that if it's you found in the inner half between the rechem and the lul, then you're saying definitely tummy, because there's no question it could have come from the rechem. Why? She may have been laying flat on her back, and then it could come from the aliyah, and then travel in that direction. Because
even if she lays flat, it goes upward in a hill. It could not go all the way to the uterus.
Nobody said it goes all the way to the uterus. It doesn't have to go all the way to the uterus. All we're saying is if you find it from the lul in the direction of the uterus, then it's vade tame. But what? Well, that's new, but we're not distinguishing. So what's the difference? Elo amar abayas. Abayas says that distinction doesn't seem to work. If you're going based on a supposition, on a concern, that you may have to talk about what position was her body in. Was she laying down? Was she bending over or whatever? Ivy suffer who? Then in both cases it should be a suffix, because either way, depending whether she was bending down or depending whether she was flat on her back, the blood could travel in either direction. Standing, bending down versus laying flat on her back.
Bending down, everything would go down.
That's the point, and therefore it could be.
Go back up.
That's the point. Therefore, it could be from the cheder, it could be from the aliyah.
Right.
But if she's flat on her back, then also it could be from the cheder or from the aliyah, because and continues Abaya, if you're going to go according to Chazaka, the Chazaka is that blood comes from the uterus. It's not normal for a woman to bleed from her aliyah. Again, whether the aliyah is the bladder or the ovaries, whatever, it's not normal for her to bleed from there. So therefore, then you should say that whatever you find further back into the body from the lul would be definitely tomei, fine. Min aluv alachot vaday tomer. But whatever you find further out from the lul would be definitely tomer, because if you're not going to worry about body position, Rav Huna was clarifying that if you find it in the inner half, it's vaday tomer, and if you find it in the outer half, it's suffik tomei. Abaya says why?
They
use the expression "fake tummy." But then Rabbi Bar Rabuna clarified with his father. His father Rabuna clarified to him, "Min aluv l'chnim vaday tummy, min aluv l'achot fake tummy." Abaya says why? If in one case you're saying it's vaday, then that means you're ignoring possible body positions. And in that case, you could say that the other one is vaday tohar. And if you're going to say that, and if you're going to say that you're looking at body positions, then in both cases it should be something. So either way, Abaya is saying that doesn't seem that logic doesn't seem to work. So let's talk further about it. Tani Rabchia, dam hanimtza b'proizder. If you find blood in the proizder, in the vagina, let's say, according to the majority of opinions, chayoven olav al bias mikdash, then the din is that you chayav, if for example a woman who has such bleeding then goes into the bias mikdash, she's chayav kares to a korban, as the case may be, depending whether it was shogig or made it, because in other words, she's vadei tomei, the sof in all of us a truma, and you would burn truma if she touched it, because again, it's vadei tomei. Now, Rav Chia is not specifying whether he means between the cheder and the lul, or whether he means from the lul outward. He's just saying generically the proizder. That's what we have to figure out soon what he means. But Rav Kina Omar, Rav Kina says, on the other hand, no. Ein chayav nala b'abias mikdash. No. If you just found blood over there in the proizder, she's not chayav. It's also for her to go into the b'abias mikdash, because it's a suffix. But there's no chiyuv of karis or a korban for it. the Ein Sof and all of us are Truma, and you wouldn't burn Truma, because again, it's only a Suffolk, and you don't burn a Truma for Suffolk. So let's figure out
what's
Prozda. No, he's saying Prozda means he's fine. They're fine, but he's saying that if you find blood in the Prozda, it's only a Suffolk. So one second. So Lachach Lishna de Omer Abaya. So let's figure out what, let's figure out which of the opinions that we said so far on the subject, which one this Braisa of Reb Chiya and the statement of Reb Chiya fits. Lachach Lishna de Omer Abaya, according to the last thing that we said, that Abaya had said, that the Ibosu Chashosha Azlas, where Abaya had said that you have to be consistent if you're considering what possible body positions she may have been in when the blood was flowing, and therefore both of them should be a suffix. Then Messiah Le Rukhtina. Then we would say that what Abaya is saying supports what. Then we would say that what Abaya is saying supports what. What Rav Chiya is saying would support what Rav Chiya is saying. Upliga de Rav Chiya. And then it would mean that. And then it would mean Rav Chiya is disagreeing with Abaya. Namely, Abaya would say that it doesn't matter where we found the blood, whether we found it further in, further out, and also whether we found it on the top or the bottom of the prozder. Up until now, we haven't mentioned that distinction, but when we think about it, if the blood came from the rechem, then it would be more likely to be on the bottom of the prozder because it would flow along the Well, no. Well, unless she was lying. Rechem means the womb. The uterus.
If she was lying on her face,
fine. But we're okay. Fine. But normally, most of the time, whether she's standing or lying flat on her back, normally you would expect it to drip down the bottom of the lower side of the prozer. On the other hand, if it came from the aliyah, then you would expect
standing.
One second. But if it came from the aliyah, then the greater likelihood, it on the face of it, is that you would find it on the gag. You would find it more on the top half of the prozder because it starts dribbling down there eventually. If there's enough of it, then it'll drip down, but it'll start.
Yeah, but bladder, you don't even have a
if you have a fistula there, like we were saying before. Okay, but nevertheless, no, we're not assuming without, because again, you have the explanation of this Professor Yehuda Levy, and it's a very ingenious explanation. But nowadays, no, because they have antibiotics, but back in those days, they didn't, so therefore it's possible. Okay, you can assume, based on one way of explaining our Gemara, that is. Okay, well, however you want to explain it, the point is, on the face of it, if the blood came from the lul, you would expect to find some of it on the top of the prozder rather than the bottom. Now, Abaya is not making any such distinctions. Abaya is saying that, well, what are we considering? Are we considering various positions that she was in? And like you said, if she was lying flat on her face, then you're not going to have that distinction between top and bottom. So if we say like Abaya, then it would mean that Abaya is agreeing with what Rav Katina says. That's always a suffix. And Rav Chiya's Braisa then would be disagreeing with that, because Rav Chiya's Braisa would be saying that there are cases where you say it is Vade Tomei.
Which is when?
Rav Chiya just said Dama Nimsa B'Proizer without specifying where it is. Lahach Lishna D'Amach Ibosa Chazaka Azlat. On the other hand, then you had Abaya continued. Another possibility is, though, that maybe we should go according to the Chazaka, and the Chazaka is any blood that's found in the Proizer is going to come from the uterus, because it's an uncommon thing for it to come from the Aliyah. If we take that view, Messiah Le Rav Chiya, then it would mean that then this concept of Chazaka would be supporting what Rav Chiya says. Because there's a Chazaka, then again, we don't care where in the prozder we found the blood. We're always going to assume, unless we have a strong reason to say otherwise, that it came from the Cheder and makes her tummy. Or Pliga the Rav Chiya. And of necessity, therefore, that second Lashon of Abaya would have to be arguing with Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya is saying that's a suffix, that you don't burn truma for it, and you're not mechayev for a korban for being even. Well, right, that's the point. In other words, if we're saying the reason is based on chazaka, then obviously Rav Chiya would be arguing with that, and he would say that chazaka is not relevant to you. Depending which of Abaya's two possibilities we take, we can say that either we can say that either Abaye is agreeing with Rav Chiya and not with Rav Chinna, or the other way around.
He would disagree with
Rav Chinna, but he would agree with Rav Chiya. And according to the first one, we would say the other way around. He would be agreeing with Rav Chinna that no matter where you find it, it's always a suffix, because she could have been in one or another position, which caused the blood to flow in an unexpected direction, and it would disagree with Rav Chiya, who says that's about it. You think? Okay, fine. Rav Huna loitli. According to Rav Huna, though, who said before in the sugya, who explained to his son before, Rav Bar Rav Huna, he said that if you find it further in from the law, then it's vade tome, and if you find it further out than the law, it's suffix tome. If we meaning closer to the uterus, from between the uterus and the lul, then it would be vade, and from the lul outward would be a suffix. If we take that view, then loy pligi, then we don't necessarily have to say that Rav Chiya and Rav Chinna are arguing with each other or with him, because kan min aluv lefnim, kan min aluv lachutz. Because Rav Chiya would be talking about where you found that min aluv lefnim, and according to Rav Huna's understanding, that is vade tamei, because there we say the overwhelming likelihood is that it came from the uterus, as opposed to if you find that min aluv lachutz, that would be where Rav Chinna comes in and says it's only a suffix, because it may have come.
Almost chutz. What's the difference between lul and chutz?
Well, that's a bit of another problem with the idea that the lul is the urethra, because then you have very little space between there and chutz. It's true. So therefore, the explanation about this idea of a fistula is a little more attractive, because then you actually have a significant area. Because again, in those times, it may have been much more common. Were you practicing medicine 1600 years ago?
We've seen bodies from those times. We know that
soft tissues like that don't get preserved. Come on.
Mummies preserve everything.
Okay, mummies. Fine, mummies. But the mummies are not exactly represent mummies. First of all, mummies are not representative of even the general population, because usually only the rich and powerful who got mummified. So of course they had better medical care also. And second of all, they're certainly not representative of Jewish women who had a lot more children, for example. So Okay. But now we have to figure out how we understand Rav Chiya's statement and Rav Chinna's statement. How are we going to understand it? According to Rami Bashmul and Rav Yitzchak Breder Rav Yehuda, the Amri, where they said at the beginning of the sugya, min aluv lechut sefei tahor, min aluv lefnim sefei tome, they say that whichever place you find it in, it's always only sefei tome. So according to them, hani b'mayim mitchaifma. So these statements, the mayim mitchaifma, how are we going to establish them? How are we going to understand them? Min aluv lefnim, we're going to say it's talking about only from the lul inward. Lema pliga de Rav Chiya. Would that mean then that they're arguing with Rav Chiya, where Rav Chiya had said that wherever you find it, it's a vade? The answer is loikasha, and here we have the answer that even according to them, there's no contradiction, because kanshinim to the kalka proser, kanshinim to the gag proser, because it depends. If you find it on the floor of the proser, which is the normal place, meaning the bottom side of it. When she's standing up, but the point is, in other words, that you have the proser is shaped like a tube, more or less, right? So you have like any tube. It's got a top part and it's got a bottom part.
That's what. Or she's lying.
Okay, either way, whatever. No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, in other words, if you have a tube, let's say, fine. But if you have a more or less straight tube, so you have the top of it, which is called the gag, and you have the bottom of it, which is called the pipe. Fine. So it could fall from one to the other, but if you find it on one second, if you find it on the karka, then you have very strong reason to say that it came from the cheder. You have no particular reason to assume it came from the aliyah, because if it came from the aliyah, you should expect to find at least some of it on the gag, because after all, the aliyah is above the proizer.
How do you know you find it?
You do a bidikah. She sticks in a cloth and then puts it in.
If she's been lying on her stomach, it's just the reverse.
Okay, the point is, though, if we find it on the karka, where did it come from? I mean, in the bottom, the lower half. No, it means, no, I guess you would say actually, it's when she's standing. So you're talking about, I guess, the caudal versus the cranial.
Caudal
means towards the tail, like towards the bottom of the body, versus cranial towards the head.
That's what it means?
So, yes, that's it. So now, think of it. If we're saying that the aliyah opens into the top of the prosder, so if blood came from there, why are you only finding it on the bottom? Therefore, you have much stronger reason to think that it didn't come from there. Otherwise, there'd be at least some trace of it on the top. So therefore, it's more likely it came from the cheder. So that would be when a priya is saying that, then we consider her definitely tummy. When are they saying that it's a suffix, regardless whether you find it closer to the womb from the lula or further away? They're talking about where you find it contrary to the gag of the prosder. If you find it on the top half of the
gag
of the prosder, therefore would be the side would be again. You have a tube over here. There we go. Yeah. Okay.
Show me on the picture. This
okay.
The guard.
1 second. So if this is fine, if this is the prosder over here, then the gag would be here, the side that's closer to the bladder, and the karka would be the side that's further away from it.
So the gag would be anterior, and the other one. What's the other one?
The other one that would be the karka. Fine, would be posterior. Fine, both sides. Okay. Anyway, the point is that yes. So when would they be saying that it's a suffix? When you find it on the gag, because how does it come to be on the gag? It could come there from the uterus, of course, especially if she was lying on her stomach. But on the face of it, you have a certain likelihood that it came from the aliyah, and therefore, since the aliyah is above, then therefore naturally you find the blood above as well. Because it dribbled along there.
On the gag.
And it said that you have a certain reason to think that it may have come from the aliyah. Therefore, so now at this point, but the point is, in other words, at this point, therefore, you have a double suffix. It may have come from the aliyah. And why do you find it further back? Because she was lying on her back, or it may have come from the cheder. So you have already a suffix over here. So you have over here a suffix. Did it come from the aliyah? And if so, is it possible she was lying on her back and that explains why it's further back? So therefore, they would say it's only a suffix, as opposed to if you find it on the karka, then they'd say there's nothing to talk about. There's a strong likelihood that it came from the cheder.
The whole area is tight and small. You put a material inside. You know if it came from the top of the
You pull it out. You pull
he's
it
right.
straight out.
He's right.
Well,
he's right.
It depends. Well, actually, that's true. So if you, for example, if she takes, hold on, so fine. If she takes, okay, if she takes the bedikka cloth and swirls it around in there, then of course you're right. There's no way to tell. But if, let's say, she sticks it in and then immediately pulls it out without turning it in one direction or another, then then you're going to be able to
see
top of
it. Halfway towards one side and then halfway towards the other.
Okay, maybe I don't know.
But even then, it could still fall from the gut, depending on our position, from the gut to the karka.
Fine, that's true. And according to the first few explanations that we said, according to Abaya, two ways of looking at it, according to Rav Huna, then fine, we're not taking that into consideration. Whether it's gag or whether it's karka doesn't matter. We said according to Abaya, one way of looking at it is we would say it's a suffix. According to the other way, we would say that's vadai. According to Rav Huna, it would be either in one half vadai and the other half suffix. Only according to Rami and Rav Yitzchok would be saying it's always a suffix. So we're clarifying now that according to them, even according to them, sometimes it's a vadai, namely if you find it on the karka. Only if you find it on the gag, that's when we start talking about whether that's what the Gemara is explaining here. Yeah.
According to them,
if you find it on the gag, then it's only a suffix. If you find it on the character, then it's a vada. Because then, if it's on the gag, or it may have come from there, may have come from the uterus, sure, but it may have also come from the aliyah. That's what Rashi is saying over here, because after all, you also still have the possibility that maybe she was lying flat on her back, and therefore that caused it to dribble backwards, so you still only have a suffix.
It's still a suffix.
It could also be the same, no matter where it comes from.
So there is actually, it's interesting, that the next Mishnah on your Testament Aleph that talks about the various colors, that the various colors that are metame the woman, you actually have a machlokas rishonim, why dafka only those colors? Is it the chinuch learns, the sefer chinuch learns that it's because only those colors come from the uterus, and any other color means it came from somewhere else, such as the aliyah, whereas according to the Rambam, it seems that's not the distinction. It's just xeris hakosu, that only certain ones are metame, or halacha meshmisina, whatever, that only certain ones are metame or not. So according to the Rambam's way of explaining it, at least the color might not necessarily tell you anything. Amar of Yechman. No, so with the halacha, the Rambam paskin, like Rav Huna. That is, we don't care about gag and we don't care about gag and karka. It's strictly a question of, is it further back from the lul in the direction of the uterus? Then it's vaday tame, or is it in the direction of the lul going outward? Then it's only sotah tame.
The Rambam was a physician.
That's true. Yeah.
So
okay. The Rambam over here is not passing based on his knowledge of medicine. He's passing according to Rav Huna based on the discussion with
Gemara.
Why is he choosing Rav Huna's opinion? I don't know. It's a good question. We'd have to look in the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam probably. Okay.
Can you look it up?
I will look it up. Okay. One reason, I suppose, might be because we know the rule that up until the time of Abaya and Rava, we usually pass him like the earlier authority over the later one. Rav Huna is obviously before his son. He's also before Rami Bar Shmuel and Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yehuda because they were his talmidim, and he's before Abaya. So that might be a reason to pass him, I think. Okay.
Yeah. But that means the more learned, but also means they know the science of a woman.
Well, that's true also. No. Well, when we're talking about over here, the halacha is like the earlier authorities, until Abaya and Rava. We say in general, in halacha, that's the usual rule.
So here
we
have,
yeah, right. After Abaya and Rava, halacha, that's right. Right. Okay, let's go on. Almud of Yechon. Before that, halacha is like the earlier ones. That's what I just said. Halacha, I don't know what the expression for it is. Okay. Almud of Yechon. B'shloshim akumis hocho by chachamim acha haroiv. There are three cases where we find that the chachamim followed roiv v'asom kevadai and said not just because the roiv, then there's a good chance of it, but we actually consider it vadai and we consider it vadai tomei. Now, what's the chiddush in it? Usually we go according to Roiv. One explanation is that we mean even though, for example, let's say one explanation is even according to the mayor, who sometimes is choshish for the miut, Rabbi Yechon is saying in these three cases, everybody's going to agree that we go according to the Roiv. Another possibility that's brought up also is in these three cases that he's going to list, you have something unusual, you have an unusual circumstance, he would think. Once we see it's unusual in one way, maybe it's unusual in other ways as well, and still we don't say that. Okay, what are they? Mocker, Shulia, Chaticha. So, Mocker, Hadamar, and this that we said about the Mocker, which is another name for the cheder, for the womb, that if we find blood between the Mocker and the Lul, then we say we assume it came from the Mocker, and we consider it Vadai Tome, and you burn Truma, et cetera, et cetera. That was Rahuna's position, right? So that might be another reason to pass them like Rahuna, yeah. Shilya, where do we go? So even though it's only a Roiv, because there is a miot of blood that could be there from the Aliyah, nevertheless we treat it as a Roiv. Nevertheless we treat it as an absolute thing. Number two, Shilya. We have a din involving a Shilya, which is a placenta. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah later on in the next paragraph. Shilya b'bayis, if you find, we learned it in Bechoros as well, actually, if you find a placenta in the house, a bias, that's it. So it's actually a little bit of both. There's a bag, the sack that the baby grows in, and attached to it is the placenta. So if you find that in the house, the Rambam describes, for example, that the shilya is what the baby tears open and then comes out of the womb, which describes the amniotic sac. But it's also, we see from various Gemaras that discuss it, that it also means the placenta. So if you find a placenta in a house, habayis, a human placenta, habayis tomei, then the house is tomei, as oil ames, loish, veloish al shilya vlad. Now it's not because the placenta itself is a baby and in the time of oil, elisha in shilya veloish vlad, but there can't be a shilya without a baby, so therefore there has to be a baby there, even though you don't notice it. Yeah. So therefore, we see again. There we see that the chachamim follow Roiv and consider it a vadai. Reb Shimon says not necessarily because nimoy kavlad ad shelo yetzei. Not necessarily, says Reb Shimon, because the baby may have been dissolved before it came out, and now it became blood, and now it's just mixed in with the blood from the birth, and therefore it's batal b'roiv. So therefore, not necessarily is the house tamei. But according to the chachamim,
there has to be, in other words, a no cells to be tamei.
To be metame, yeah.
If there's just a shilya, that's not enough.
If we knew there was just a shilya there without a baby, then yeah, it wouldn't be enough. So that's Rav Shimon's position. But the Chachamim are saying, whenever there's a shilya, there's always going to be a baby.
You cannot find the baby.
It doesn't matter. The Chacham say it's obviously there because where is the baby otherwise? Yeah. Okay. So that's
it's always coming.
Yeah. So they okay. Yeah. Chaticha. Yeah. Chaticha. Where do we see a case involving a piece of flesh? The Tanan, we have the Tanya actually, it's a bright in the next parak. Hamapelas yod chatucha v'rego chatucha. If a woman miscarries a separated hand or a separate, no, sorry, chatucha means that it's separated. There's no rest of the body there right now. But chatucha, for our purposes over here, means delineated, that it has the actual full shape of a hand. It's got fingers. It's got fingers delineated. V'rego chatucha, or it's got a foot that's completely delineated that has toes. Then imay tmeya leida, the mother is tamei from having given birth.
Separated
from the rest of the body, right. She's tamei for giving birth. And therefore, now we don't know whether it was a boy or a girl. So therefore, as far as Tumah, we have to treat her like the chumras of a zakar and a keva, which we're going to learn about in the next parak. But the point is, in other words, that the ein choshishin shemam guf otum bof. We don't concern ourselves. We don't say that maybe it wasn't an actual baby. It may have been like a what's called guf otum means like a piece of flesh that doesn't have an actual shape to it. Now, if it does that, then we're going to learn in the next paragraph such a thing is not considered a baby. In this case, what we're saying over here is we do say she definitely gave birth to something that can be considered a baby because, again, the roiv is that when you have a hand or a foot that has a full delineation, that it came from a normal body of a baby. So the rest of the baby will come out at some later point, or maybe the rest of it dissolved in the womb or whatever. But the point is, we don't say that the rest of the baby may have been a guf otum, may have been a baby without, may have been a fetus that never started developing any features. It's like a chunk of flesh. Those maybe not necessarily, because the shoulder doesn't have such a delineation. The point is that, Rashi says, the point is that in this case, we do say she has not only Yemei Tumah, but she has Yemei Tara as well. She has days of Dam Toihar, life after a regular baby. Now, why should we say? Maybe it was a Guf Otum, and she shouldn't have Yemei Toihar. Here's the third case where we say that Roiv is considered like Vada. The Roiv of the time when you have a hand or a foot that's clearly shaped, then it means it came from a regular baby, not from a Guf Otum. Therefore it means that she has Yemei Tara after the baby is born like any other mother.
Again,
Guf Atum would be like a chunk of flesh, like you have the baby developed as a chunk, without any limbs. No particular facial features, no nothing. Right.
Yemei Tara means that after a person has a baby.
She has a baby. So we said 7 days of Tumah for a boy, 14 for a girl. And after that, you have 33 days of Tara for a boy and 66 for a girl, where even if she bleeds during that time, she's taher and mutter to her husband. Those are the dam toya we talked about previously. But yeah.
So wouldn't that be...
Had it been a guf otum, she wouldn't have Yemei Tara. She'd be tummy for the birth, for the blood that came with the birth or whatever, and then that's it. After that, no Yemei Tara. However, seven or 14 days. But then, okay. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Betul leka." Are you telling me there are no other cases where we treat a roiv as a badai? Roiv a teisha chanuyas. What about the famous case involving the 9 stores? The Tanya, we learn in a brisa, teisha chanuyas kulan merchus tzav shchuta. If you have 10 stores in town, 9 of them sell kosher meat. The achas mecheres tzav nevela. One of them sells nevela meat. The lokach ma'achas mehen, a person bought meat from one of them. The eni adam me'ezim mehen lokach. He doesn't know from which one he bought. Then because of the sophicus oster, because the stores are kavua, the stores are all fixed in place, and the halacha we consider kol kavua kmechsal mechsadami, even though 90% of the chance statistically is that he bought from one of the kosher stores, but because all of them are fixed in place, therefore halacha tells us we have to treat it as if it was 50-50.
Does it matter if there's more yidin or
more? No, it doesn't matter. But over nimsa, on the other hand, we say if you find a piece of meat in the street in such a city, then holachacha arroiv. Then we can follow the roiv, and 90% chance it's mutter, and therefore it's mutter, because now it's not kavua anymore. It's not in its original place where it belongs, and therefore we can go according to the roiv. So there you have an example where we treat roiv like vade, and we allow him to eat it. It's a tumah kamyun and isu lo kamyun. Okay, but Rabbi Yochanan's rule, he's talking about cases involving tumah. He's not talking about other areas in halacha involving Isser and Heter. He's focusing strictly on Tumah. Okay, the question is, Bahaika, but what about, we have another example where we have a roiv that we consider like a vadai when it comes to Tumah Vatara. We have a case, Teisha Tzvardin. Suppose you have 9 frogs, the sheret that are dead, the sheret Echa Benehem, and then you have between them one sheret, which now a dead frog is not Matame. A dead sheret is Matame. And sometimes it's not easy to tell the difference. For example, one of the Shemot HaShrotim is a creature called a Psov, and one possible explanation, we're not sure of the identities of a lot of these creatures, but one possibility, some of the Mephoshim say, is that a Psov is a toad. So in that case, a toad looks an awful lot like a frog. So like this. Okay, but nevertheless, there's a, fine, but it depends what kind of toad and depends what kind of frog. You have a zillion kinds of frog and you have a zillion kinds of toad, whatever. Anyway. So now, suppose a person touched one of these dead creatures. The ani dead, the ezim mehen noga. He doesn't know which one he touched. So is he tame or is he tahor? Rishus the yachid sfeke tame. Then we would say if this took place in rishus the yachid, then you have suffered tumah rishus the yachid. And even though we have a roiv of spoudim of frogs, but again you have kavua because the sheriff is kavua among them. You're back to the 50-50 situation. Therefore, he's tame. If it's in Rishus HaYachid. Rishus HaRabim Sfeikei Tomei. If in Rishus HaYachid. No, well, what we're saying is because the sheriff is kavua, therefore we also have, therefore, it's kavua. In other words, you have all the creatures are there in their place. They're all dead. They're all lying over there in their original place where they died in the summer. And therefore, yeah, again, you have 50-50. Even though it's only 1 out of 10. Halacha tells.
None of them is missing.
Right. And the point is that, yeah. So one for sure is Tomei. So Rishus HaYachid Sfeikei Tomei, Rishus HaRabim Sfeikei Tahor. If this happened in Rishus HaRabim, then we say Sopet Tumah Rishus HaRabim is.
Finding you meet in the
street. Yeah, you find them in the street, let's say. Uven Nimtza. Now that's all if you touch them in the place where they were, and you have the issue of kavua, but of a nimsa. But if you find one individual one, so let's say, in other words, you had one of these creatures, one of these dead creatures, was removed from the pile and thrown someplace else, and now you don't know where is it. Which one is it? Is it one of the 9 frogs, or is it the one sheriff? So now we say it's not kavua anymore. Therefore, halachacha arrives. So you go according to the roiv, and since 9 out of 10 of them were frogs, and therefore he's not tummy. So there's another example involving tumah v'tahara, where we say that a roiv is considered like a body.
But the mushroom using rabim and the yachid is referring to kavua, and then not kavua because it's out somewhere normal.
Right. Right. So if it's kavua, then we say you have a suffix, it's a 50-50 chance. So it depends. Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaRabim. But if you had one was taken out of the pile and then tossed someplace else, and then you touched it, then it's not kavua anymore. Then,
I thought that when you said the word Rishus HaRabim, automatically it means it's not kavua. It means it's like you found out.
No, you can have kavua in Rishus HaRabim as well. No, it's not a question. You know, if one is you find a pile of dead frogs and one sheriff among them. Versus you have. No, it doesn't matter whether one was missing. And the point is, right now we have 10 of you. That's all we care about. Not kavua would be where after you found that pile, you didn't touch it. Later on, somebody went and took one of the ones from the pile and tossed it someplace else, and then you went and touched it. Then we say you're able to go according to the road, because now it's not kavua anymore. Now it's not in the original place where it was found.
What's the difference
with Rishus HaRabim? We have a general rule. Sofik Tumah, Rishus HaRabim, Rishus HaYachid is Tumah. We talked about it at the very beginning of the Masechta. Sofik Tumah, Rishus HaRabim is Tumah. Okay. So there we have an example where we consider a roiv like a badai involving Tumah v'tahara. Why isn't it on Rabbi Yochanan's list? The answer is Tumah de'isha kamin and Tumah ba'al malay kamin. Rabbi Yochanan is only focusing when he's saying 3 times when the Chachamim treated a roiv like a vadeh, we're talking specifically with tumas involving women, involving nida, involving childbirth, whatever, not involving tumah of shrotim. Okay. What about, though, still, v'ha'ika, what about, I can give you another example, where we see that we consider a roiv like a vadeh when it comes to tumah of a woman. V'ha'ika, we have a situation that Rabbi Shurban Levi talks about in the next paragraph. Suppose a woman walked through a river, and while she was passing through the river Vihipila, she miscarried while she was crossing the river. So the baby floated, or whatever it is that she miscarried, floated away. So we don't know whether there was an actual baby there. It could have been a guf otum, like we said before. It could have been something that's not even considered a baby, la locha, whatever. What happens? Mavia korban menachal. She has to bring a korban for childbirth, and not only we say that she brings a korban, fine, she could be bringing the korban for a suffix, but even the kohen eat the chatas ha'oif that she brings. Now that means it has to be because of a vada. You wouldn't eat. We've learned before. You don't eat a chatas ha'oif that comes for a suffix, because the suffix, whether it's kolin ba'azara or not. In this case, we consider it a vada, exactly.
And that would be killed with the nail.
Yeah, they do melicha, of course. Yeah, they do melicha either way. But the point is, if it was a suffix whether you have to bring it, then the kohenim wouldn't be able to eat it, because if it wasn't supposed to be brought, then it means it's a cholin that was killed in the azara, which itself is also, plus it wasn't killed with shchita, it was killed with melicha, which would make it available. Here we're saying you actually eat it, which means holach acha roiv nashim. So Rabbi Shimon Levi says, why? Because we follow the majority of women. The roiv nashim vlad mal yoldan, and most women give birth to normal babies. So that's it, right? So we see that earlier. Well, we said roiv, it's a roiv. Well, right. So right. The end. Well, all the cases we've been talking about are daraisa.
No, I understand. Specifically.
Yeah. All the cases so far. The answer is masnisin kamrin and shmeis for the kamrin. Okay, but Rabbi Yochanan is telling us where you have three places in the shnayis or brisas where we see that a roiv is treated like a bade. Yes, you have a statement by Rabbi Shurban Levi, but Rabbi Shurban Levi is already in Amora. So Rabbi Yochanan is not focusing on that. He's telling us there are three places in the Shnayas or Brisas where we have an issue involving the Tumah of a woman, involving Tumas Nidah or Tumas Yeledah or whatever, where the Chachamim treated a Roiv as a Vada. Yes, you have other cases not involving Tumah of women that are Mishnayas and Brisas. Yes, we have other cases involving Tumah of women that are statements of Amiroyim, like Rabbi Shimon Levi, but he's not listing those. He's just
saying three in the Mishnah.
Three that are in Mishnayas or Brisas.
Mishnayas or Brisas. Right. And these three, cases,
those three, the three cases, the one involving blood from that may have come from the uterus or not, that was the subject of our Mishnah. The case where you found a placenta, a shilya in the house, where we assumed there was a baby with it. And the third one we said was the case over there where no, not where it came out in the river. That we said that was River Shurban Levi. The third one was said where a hand or a foot came out, so we assume it came from a fully formed baby. Right. Okay.
So shilya.
What was it? Mocker, Shulia, and Hatzur.
Those three cases,
Rabbi Yochanan wants us to know that those are all in Mishnayis and Brisas. They all involve the tumor of a woman, and all of them we treat a roiv like a bat.
That's why.
So that's why he's listing only those. So a fourth case involves where she miscarried in the river. Rabbi Yochanan agrees to that, but he's just not mentioning. He's just not listing it because it's not a Mishnah or a Brisa. Okay. So the Gemara says, what about, though? I have another example. Vahaki also Robin Omar. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, you have a long discussion in the next parak about a case, the Toya, Moshe Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, Toya. You have a long case that the Gemara is going to discuss later, on Daf Tes, towards the end of the next parak, involving a woman who gave birth and she's not sure when it was. And Rabbi Yosef, Toya means she means Toya, means she has an answer, she's mistaken. She's not sure when she gave birth. And Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, in that connection, in connection with the statement of Rabbi Shurban Levi that we just said about the woman who miscarried in the river, Rabbi Yosef of Chanina brings up as a question about that a brisa that discusses a case where a woman doesn't know when she gave birth. The exact details we'll see over there when we get to the sugya on Daf Chafetz. But the point is, so Robin says, yes, Rabbi Yosef of Chanina brought a brisa involving Toya, but Veloya Dynamite Yukte, but Robin says, I don't understand what Rabbi Yosef thought is in that brisa seems to contradict Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and the Gemara discusses over there the details. So my love, Lois Yukte Elaseyasa. On the face of it, what Robin means is, on the contrary, here Rabbi Yosef of Chanina is bringing that brisa as a question on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And instead, if you analyze the brisa carefully, you find that it supports what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying. Well, in that case, we have a brisa that's effectively saying the same thing as Rabbi Shimon Levi, so it should be on Rabbi Yochanan's list. The answer is loy.
So support, it doesn't mean it.
It means effectively it says the same thing. But the answer, then it should be on Rabbi Yochanan's list. But the answer is loy. Not necessarily is that what Robin meant. Maybe he means you can't use the brisa to contradict Rabbi Shimon Levi, because it's talking about a different case, but you also can't use it to prove what he's saying either. So it's neither. It's talking about a whole different case. So therefore, that's why it's not on Rabbi Yochanan.
Why can you say that it could disprove or prove?
Because
if one or the other.
Well, that's the question. We thought that the Rabbi Yosef of Chanina brings that brisa to as a seeming contradiction, as it may be. He brings it as a contradiction against Rabbi Yosef ben Levi. The Gemara says over there, it's not a contradiction. So actually, what Robin says, I don't understand even why Rabbi Yosef of Chanina brought it up. It doesn't contradict Rabbi Yosef ben Levi. So the Gemara over here is assuming he meant not only it doesn't contradict him, but it supports him. The Gemara is saying, no, all Robin means is it doesn't contradict him. It doesn't necessarily support him.
Why
the
Gemara says it supports him?
If we said it supports him, then we would have a question. Why do
we say it supports him?
We don't say it supports him. We're asking, is that what Ravin meant? Did Ravin mean that it supports him? In that case, why isn't it on Rabbi Yochanan's list? And the answer is, he doesn't mean that it supports him. Okay. So now that we've established that, now that we've established why Rabbi Yochanan has this list and no other, now we have to ask, l'ma'uti mai? Okay, what actually is Rabbi Yochanan trying to tell us? What is he trying to exclude? Now that we understand, he's talking only about a very specific, narrow group of things. He's talking about where it involves a tumah of women, where it's Mishnah, it's a bride. So why does he need to tell us that? What is he trying to tell us? Apparently, he's trying to tell us that there's another case in a Mishnah or a Braisa, which he's saying, where he doesn't hold that Roiv is considered like a Bada. So let's figure out what that case is. So l'ma'uti mai? Ilema l'ma'uti ruba di'ika chazok abade? Is it that Rabbi Yochanan is telling us that we're excluding the case of a Roiv that has a chazoka opposite it? Meaning, for example, the three cases that we mentioned, the case of blood from the uterus and all the other ones, the roiv goes together with the chazaka. Most blood that you find in the inner half of the prozer comes from the rechem. In addition, in general, you have a chazaka, that blood from a woman anyway comes more often from there than from the aliyah. The same thing by the other two cases, as opposed to maybe Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us that only when you have a roiv which is supported by a chazaka, only then would the chachamim say we treat it as a vaday, but not when you have a roiv that's contradicted by a chazaka. So is that the clue? Well,
the reason why there's a chazaka is because it's
not necessarily, because we're going to have examples over here. But are we going to say that where you have something where you have a roiv that is opposed by a chazaka, where therefore the chazaka therefore weakens the roiv, and Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us that in that case we do not say we consider it like a badai, and the loisa finan aleiyat truma, and therefore we would not burn truma in a case of possible truma like that. We don't need Rabbi Yochanan to be telling us that by implication by mentioning these three cases, because v'ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan chabazimne, because Rabbi Yochanan has already told us that in a different context. He's explicitly told us that where you have the chazaka opposes the roi, then you don't. So we don't need him to, right, exactly. It's not, namely like this. Where do we see Rabbi Yochanan saying that? We have a Mishnah that goes like this. We've learned it in Chulin. If you find a child next to a batch of dough, he's alive, next to a batch of dough, which is supposed to be staying tahor, for example, dough of kurma, or botik biyada, and he has a piece of dough in his hand, in Holland. Rav Meir Matar, b'chachamim matamin. Rav Meir says it's tahor. The Chachamim say it's Tameh, because it's normal for a child to, one second, to be Metapeach. Now, what is Metapeach? Rashi explains over here and in the other places that Metapeach means that a child commonly plays around with things, including things in the garbage. So therefore, he's very likely to have touched a dead sheriff. Now we have a piece of dough in his hand. That means obviously he touched the dough. So therefore, we have a roiv, therefore. The point is the dough had a chazaka of being tahor until now. On the other hand, we have roiv of children who are metapeach, who play around in the garbage and touch shrotim, and therefore if he touched the dough, then he made it tameh. According to Tosfos, actually,
the roiv of children make things tameh?
Yes, because the roiv of children was saying play around in the garbage. In those days, yeah. I mean, we're not talking nowadays where they have iPads.
No, it goes against
the chazaka. The chazaka is that the dough is tahor, because up until now we know the dough is tahor. No, that's chachamim are saying it's tahor. So therefore, So we see, in other words, let's finish the discussion.
Where do you see the chazaka is the dough is tahor?
Because that's how it was. It was tahor until now. That's the chazaka. And in the Gemara where we discuss this point, we explain, my time at Rav Meir, why indeed does Rav Meir hold the dough is tahor? On the face of it, you have a kid whose tummy touched it. Because Kasava rose to Nokas Metapchen. He says like this, it's true most kids play in the garbage, and therefore they touch shrotim. Umiyot ein Metapchen. You have a minority of kids who don't. But on the other hand, the Isa Zuba Cheska Tahora in Medis. This dough had a chazaka of being tahor. Therefore, says Rav Meir, Smoich Miota LaChazaka. Therefore, by combining together the chazaka that the dough had with the miot of children who don't make a tameh, then the Itra Le Ruba. Therefore, Rav Meir says that weakens the roiv. Therefore, that weakens the roiv, and therefore you can't say the dough is tummy. V'rabbanan, whereas the Rabbanan hold, mi'utra command alesei jami, we ignore the mi'ut completely. In general, we have many times in Shas where the mayor takes the mi'ut into consideration and the Chachamim do not. So the Chachamim would say, forget about the mi'ut. The majority of children do, the majority are matatzin, and therefore we have to consider that the child was definitely playing in the garbage of a ruba b'chazaka, ruba adif. It's fine. So you have a roiv opposed by a chazaka, because sure, they agree that Joe had a chazaka. Because the point is, his logic is that the mute, there is after all that mute, that this child may not have been charming in the first place. Fine. Plus the fact that you have a chazaka, that says, the plus the fact that the Joe had a ches tara. So there, and therefore, the mayor says,
but the children don't.
Okay, but that the Joe does. So therefore, the mayor
says.
Mean the children. Therefore, the mayor says that therefore that's good enough. You can't. In other words, actually, what Rashi says is you have two reasons to be matar and only one reason to be matar. You have two reasons to be matar because the two reasons are the child himself may be tar and the Joe was known to be tar.
Probably not tar if the majority.
The child may be tar because the mayor takes the mute into account.
The rove of children belong to the metapchim.
That's fine.
And therefore,
that's fine. Listen, Reb Meir who holds Chayesh Lemiota says that you have the possibility that the child is not tame. You also have. Let me finish a sentence, please. You're asking a question. I know. You asked a question in five different ways.
No.
But you're not letting me go.
According to a roi.
Of course we go according to the roi, but the mayor says you also have to take into account the mute. So if you only had roi versus mute, of course you go according to the roi. But the mayor would say when you have a mute and you also have a chazaka on the side of the mute, so you have two reasons to be matahar, because of the chazaka or because of the mute, and you also have, and opposite that, you have one reason to be matahar, namely the roiv. Reb Meir would say, then the roiv does not have the strength to be matahar. The chachamim disagree, because they ignore the mute altogether. Okay, so therefore they say, ruva chazaka, ruva adif. When you have roiv against chazaka, then the roiv is stronger. There, Amar Ishlokish Meshum Rav Oshia. So now, on this whole discussion, Ishlokish says in the name of Rav Oshia, Zuhi chazaka shesofen alayat atzlumah. When the Chachamim are saying that we have the chazaka that most children are metapchin, we would consider it a full-fledged chazaka, like the ones that we talk about in Amar Aleph, to the extent that we would burn truma for it. But Rabbi Yechanan disagrees and says, "Einzu chazaka shesofen alayat atzlumah." He says, fine, we have to consider the Joe Tomei, not like the mayor who allows us to consider it Tar, but we can't say to the extent that it's Vadai Tomei to go so far as burning it as Truma Tnea, that Rabbi Yechanan says we can't do.
Why not?
Because it's not a Vadai. So therefore we see that Rabbi
Yechanan... It's not a total Vadai.
That's the point. That's what we're getting at. So we see, therefore, so on the face of it, we could say Rabbi Yechanan's list of three things before was when you have a roi which is supported by a chazaka. Again, for example, the example of the blood in the prose over there, where the roi comes from the uterus, and also the chazaka is that it comes from the uterus, then we would say that we consider it a vaday. But Rabbi Yechanan would be saying that when there's a roi opposed by a chazaka, as in this case, after all, I'm going to have to agree, you have a roi on one side and you have a chazaka on the other. They say that, fine, the roi wins out because we ignore the mute. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yechanan says, not to the extent that we're going to burn it. So Rabbi Yechanan already said that.
One second. So here he says that because of the mute, we don't burn.
Exactly. Right.
Right?
Not because of the mute. Because the roiv and the chazaka oppose each other. They're standing in opposition. The roiv of children are tame,
right,
but the doe had a chazaka of being tar, and therefore so they don't completely cancel each other out, but they do make it at least that you can't say it's vadei tame. But if that's all Rabbi Yechanan wants to tell us, then he already told us that explicitly in that case. We don't need him to imply it by giving us a list of three cases.
So
that's not a reason for him to give a list. By the way, Tosfos, I should also mention, Tosfos has a different understanding of Roiv Tinokos Metapchin, because Tosfos, based on various other Gemaras and Tosfos and whatever, explains differently. Roiv Tinokos Metapchin does not mean most children become Tomei by touching Shrotim. Most children become Tomei for other reasons. For example, because women who are Nida, his mother, aunts, whatever, hug him, kiss him, whatever, and therefore they make him tummy. Roiv Tinokos Metapchin, according to Tosfos, means most children are going to touch the dough, because children are naturally curious, and they're going to touch the dough and take a chunk of it. Okay, fine. All right. Elo l'ma'uti ruba d'Rabbi Yehuda. Rather, we would have to say that what Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us with his list is to tell us not to not go according to the case of the Roiv of Rabbi Yehuda. What is that case? The Tanan. We learn, it's going to be a couple of blocks from now, at the beginning of the next year, Hamapelas Chaticha, if a woman miscarries a chunk of flesh, so it doesn't, again, it's like it has no shape, no particular shape to it, like the guf otum, like we said before. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im yesh im adam, if there is blood accompanying it, tamea, then she's tamea like any other nida. She's not tamea as a yeladet, because not considered a baby, but she's tamea because of the blood. What? Yeah, the trunk of meat is not going to be the family here as a yoledet, because it's not considered a baby.
Unless
it's a shape of right, that's what we said before. But if there's blood with it, then she's tamei v'im lav to her. And if not, the chachamim say she's tamei because there's no baby and there's no blood.
What is it?
It's not. It's whatever it is. It's not considered anything other than the family. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a ben kach or ben kach tamei. Rabbi Yehuda would say that either way, whether there's blood or not, there's tamei. She's tamei as a woman who gave birth. Well, one second. But Amr of Yehuda Amash, or not as a woman who gave birth, actually, as a nida. Now, why should she be tamei as a nida? The Amr of Yehuda Amash Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda explained, Rabbi Yehuda the Amora explains in the name of Shmuel in the Gemara over there. Loi timi, Rabbi Yehuda el b'chaticha shal abam mine damin. When does Rabbi Yehuda say she's tamei only if this chunk of flesh? Rabbi Yehuda the Amora is explaining that Rabbi Yehuda the Tana is saying, right, only if the piece of flesh that she miscarried has the color of one of the four colors that we're going to learn in the next Mishnah that are Mitameh or Damnida. We actually have five colors in the next Mishnah, but the Gemara explains one of them is a color that deteriorated, basically. Like you had an original bright color and then it deteriorated. Anyway, but so basically you have four colors. So if it's one of those four colors, then we assume that it is basically a chunk of blood. So it looks like a piece of flesh, but nevertheless, we consider it a chunk of blood, and therefore he's going to be mitameher. Avol shamine damim tahara, but if it looks any other color, then Rabbi Yehuda would say it's tahara. That Shmuel says, but Rabbi Yechanan says, no, shall avimine damim give a hakol tmeya. If it was one of the four colors of dam nida, then even the chachamim would agree she's tamei as a nida, because then we'd assume it's congealed blood. And the shoshar damim give a hakol tahara. And if it's of any other color other than those four, all of them would agree she's tar, because definitely not blood, and they're not concerned about it being a baby. Lo nechluku, when is the machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim? They say, Rabbi Yechon, elekshi pila ve'eni adas nahi pila. She miscarried something, but she doesn't know what it was. The piece got lost before she could bring it to a rav to ask the shayla. But now, Rabbi Yehuda suffers zilbas aroy chatichis. Rabbi Yehuda holds you go according to the majority of pieces that a woman could miscarry. V'roy chatichis shall have a mina jamnadian. Most pieces, most chunks that are going to come out of a woman's uterus, out of her vagina, whatever, are going to be of the color of one of the four mina jamim. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says a roy would tell us therefore that she's tamei nida. V'rabbanan savri zilbas aroy chatichis le'amrinan. Whereas the chachamim say you don't go according to the roy of pieces. So Rashi explains that they're actually arguing on the facts of it here. Do we say that most pieces that come out of her are going to be one of these four colors? Rabbi Yehuda says not. Rabbi Yehuda says yes. The Chacham says not necessarily. But now the piece was lost, so it's not case by case. Right, that's what Rabbi Yehuda was saying. If we can see the piece and we see it's one of the four colors, then she's definitely tamei. And if it's not, she's definitely tamei. But here where the piece got lost, Rabbi Yehuda would say the roiv of them are one of these four colors. The Chacham is saying not necessarily the roiv of them are one of these four colors.
Because in the previous argument, they said the roiv was the main thing.
That's fine, but here we're saying that, because over here, that's why Rashi is explaining that here the Chacham say it's not even a roiv. You, Rabbi Yehuda, are saying it's a roiv, 51% or more of the four mine jamim. The Chacham say we disagree, only 49% of chatichas are one of the four mine jamim. So therefore, there's no roiv. You have other explanations of Rishonim as well about what the Rabbanon mean, but Rashi says the Chachamim say there's no roiv over there. So therefore, you can see it, for the last Rashi before the Mishnah. Deloy Svirla, who roiv chatichas, shall dalad min adamim. They don't hold that most chatichas are one of the four colors. So when Rabbi Yechanan tells us that in Mishnayis and Braithas there's only three cases involving Tumah of a woman, where we go according to the roiv, the Tuloy, and no more, that is Lama'uti Horuba de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yechanan wants to tell us, don't follow Rabbi Yehuda's idea of the roiv over here. The Rabbi Yehuda de Ozobot the Ruba, Loik Vade Meshabbat, because even Rabbi Yehuda, who holds you go according to the Shmuel, loy kevadim Shabbos. Like, even Rabbi Yehuda is not going to say in this case where the piece was lost and we don't know what color it was. He's not going to say that it was that it's considered kevadim Shabbos. Like, that it should be considered like a vadeh lisrus amagaz a truma, that you should burn truma if she touched it. Even Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that in this case the roy was only a suffix. So therefore, that's the point. Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says over here, roiv,
not
to the extent of burning truma and kodshim, as opposed to the three cases that Rabbi Yochanan gave in his list, involving the blood for the blood that's likely to have come from the rechon and the shilya and the hand or foot, then he would say you even burn truma or kodshim.
Right.
He was saying that because that's what he's saying. Because even Rabbi Yehuda is saying that he wants to inform us that his understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, that even though Rabbi Yehuda says roiv of them are these four colors, but here where you don't have the piece available in front of us and you don't have any particular chazaka one way or the other, so therefore you don't say that you would go to the extent of burning through a man's conscience. Okay.
But the Chachamim, here says
it's
no.
According to the Chachamim, says it's not even to talk about because there's no roiv anyway, right? There's no roiv to begin with of chatichas that are a certain color, right? Okay.